Good evening. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. The Center for Market Education published a policy paper that analyzes the fiscal and monetary policies implemented to help Malaysia navigate through the pandemic. The paper, authored by Farid Sazuki, Abel Benjamin Lim and Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, looks at inflation, unemployment and COVID-19 policies to determine where is the Malaysian economy heading. Joining us this evening is the CEO of the Center for Market Education Malaysia, as well as one of the co-authors of the policy paper, Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, to discuss with us at length on what it means for Malaysia's economy under the new administration. Dr. Carmelo, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's talk about the policy paper per se. Can you give a summary of what the paper touches on?
Hi, good evening, and thanks for having me, first of all. Well, we decided to write this paper because when the pandemic started, a lot of measures were taken to try to address it, first and foremost lockdowns, and then lockdowns brought the need for expansive monetary policies and expansive fiscal policies. So the paper doesn't simply aim to list the different measures that they were taken, but also to help the reader navigating through the unintended consequences that these policies produce. Because you see, there is a certain attitude, not only in policy making, but even in economic analysis, to look at different solutions as automatic solutions that would automatically generate outcomes. But instead, the economist Thomas Sowell was used to say that there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs when we deal with policymaking. So our aim was primarily to highlight what are we achieving, but also how much these policies are costing. And so we analyzed the policies, and we saw how certain unintended consequences were brought out in terms of inflation, unemployment, and most importantly, the potential seeds for a post-COVID economic crisis.
Could you share with us the first part of the paper that shares with us some trends for the GDP, some key highlights from the unemployment figures, as well as the inflation rate that the country is going through right now?
Sure. Well, with regard to unemployment, we know that last year the peak was touched of 5.3%, and now the rate is more or less navigating between 4.5 and 5%. And we expect this to remain the level up to the end of the year, and we can expect eventually an improvement only with a radical shift in policies. And the same goes for the GDP. We agreed with the analysis brought out by Fitch, according to which this year there will be basically no economic growth for Malaysia, or maybe in the best scenario we will have a small 1-2% rebound, really if policies are changed, and in particular if we start discussing not only the reopening of the economy, but also the reopening of domestic and international movements. The issue with inflation is a little bit more controversial because everybody recognizes that indeed we are experiencing inflation, but someone is saying that core inflation remain low, so we don't need to get worried. But one of the main points that we make in the paper is that inflation now is not as visible as it is because it is counteracted by the deflation produced by the crisis. So indeed, in the moment in which the crisis is over, inflation could run much faster than it is running now.
Okay, there's still plenty of items that we need to talk about, but for now, we'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with CME. We'll be right back after these messages. Thank you for staying on with us. This is Notepad. I have with me Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, the CEO of Center for Market Education. Dr. Carmelo, you were talking about some items or the trends that we can actually unearth, but there's also that element of things that might not yet be captured. One item is, of course, underemployment. People keep on obsessing about unemployment, but underemployment is rather poorly captured through economic data. There's also the shadow economy, or the economy that might not be able to be captured through taxable means, hence the creation of this shadow economy. A lot of things that are currently being done because of the pandemic that we might not be able to see it well or captured well using data. Well, how would you marry these kind of grey areas with the policy paper that CME has built very recently?
Well, we have touched mostly on underemployment actually in a previous paper a few weeks ago. And this is particularly significant because according to the most recent data, underemployment is made out of 2.1 million people. And then if we add on the other more or less 700,000 people that are fully unemployed, we got almost 3 million people that somehow struggle to make ends meet. And this means something between 17 and 18% of the Malaysian workforce. This is an issue that needs to be carefully analyzed. We have very little data. On one side, underemployment has been the safety for many. Things about basically all the opportunities created with the sharing economy, with Grab hailing services, this kind of underemployment has been actually the safety answer for many. But this is something that is going to disappear. The moment in which the economy restarts, we have no more need for all these riders, an example, and we may suffer some friction to re-get this workforce back into, let's say, traditional kind of jobs.
Yeah, sorry. I just have to jump into some of the findings right now. One of the key findings is that you were mentioning, or CME was mentioning in the policy paper, that this would create further unemployment when the stimuli is over. Could you clarify on how the current method of the expansionary economic policy that the country is going through right now will shift debt burdens down a generation? How will this create more unemployment based on the policy paper that you guys wrote?
Well, okay, this is also quite a very complex issue, and if you want, also counterintuitive. But to make it simple, basically when you stimulate the economy with a stimulus package, you are allowing business that are not responding to a current demand, or you allow employment to be created that is not consistent with the structure of the demand in place, instead to come into place. So you create artificial jobs somehow. And the artificial jobs that are created are supported, and as far as the expansive policies are in place. Meanwhile, this positive, this temporary positive effect create spillover in other industries. So create more and more occasions for business and employment. The moment in which, because of inflation, because of public debt, and et cetera, the support is withdrawn, not only those jobs that were created with the support will suffer, but also all those jobs that were created as a consequence of the support to certain industries. So paradoxically, the end situation may be worse than the situation at the beginning, because it has been addressed in a temporary way and not in a structural way. With regard instead to what you have mentioned about debt, obviously Malaysian government, but not only the Malaysian one, has a regard to debt in order to finance the additional expenditures. And sooner or later, someone will have to pay for this debt. But this is not simply an intergenerational shift of a financial burden, but also the massive intervention of the government in the economy somehow crowd out private initiatives, private investment, and therefore brings the economy to grow at a slower pace than it would have been otherwise. And this means less occasions for the future generations, together with the deteriorated purchasing power that has been created by inflation.
Do you feel that this trend is going to change? The budget is coming up very soon, maybe 2 months from now. The RMK-12, even though it's a five-year policy paper, it might take into consideration the items that are happening now, this year, and of course last year. So it might not necessarily be a long-term kind of paper. It might seek to redress and address the kind of shock that the short-term measures have been experiencing. How do you think the government is going to approach these kind of items, these two big documents that is going to be presented at the Parliament very soon, considering that what you have just mentioned just now is actually quite critical to be addressed? You know, debt is not going anywhere. It has to be paid sooner or later, right?
That's exactly the issue. So from one side, the government has no choice but to do something different, okay? And we tried also to give some suggestion in this direction. But you can't go away from what you have done so far. So the burden, the unintended consequences of what has been done in the past 18 months is there. We cannot avoid. We can try to reverse the path, but in a light or heavy form, we are going to experience some trouble created by that policies.
Regarding the monetary policy, in the policy paper that CME wrote with BNM policy, you stated something along the lines of planting the seeds of an economic crisis. Could you explain how it's causing the issue of economic crisis to be planted?
Yes, okay. First of all, according to traditional textbooks, let's say the economics that every student studies in college, whenever there is a crisis, the central bank should reduce the interest rate to stimulate the economy. And I've been claiming for years that this is a very simplistic way to see things. There are no such automatisms. Otherwise, being the governor of the central bank would be a very easy job, and it is not. It's a very complicated job. So the way in which the economy reacts to lowering the interest rate depends very much on how economic agents interpret and react to the signal sent by the central bank. So it is not automatic that expansive monetary policies will generate economic growth. This is point one. Second point, and it is related with what we have discussed before, the lowering of the interest rate generates economic initiatives that would have not been generated otherwise. And they are supported by inflation and the expectations that eventually lower interest rates will last for enough time for a boom to be completed. But this does not always happen, and often a boom sustained by the artificial creation of money is very short-lived and generates a very heavy crisis. And this is what we have seen in example with the economic crisis, the great financial crisis that happened in the West in 2007 and 2008. So here the situation is not the same, but the response, the answer that central banks have produced toward the current crisis has been very much the same. And therefore, in this sense, the central bank may plant the roots of a future economic crisis.
The thing about this is that most countries are going through the same problems as we are. Not just about holding the interest rate holding pattern, countries like China, Vietnam, Indonesia, you name it, Thailand, they're all at a holding pattern at a low interest rate with no indication that the interest rate is going to be raised anytime soon. That's one. Of course, the second issue is, of course, the health crisis. Even though countries may have had a high number of vaccination rates, like Israel or Singapore, the resurgence of the Delta variant has caused a lot of them to see daily positive cases rise yet again. And for many other countries that are still going through the vaccination process, like Malaysia or Indonesia or Philippines and Thailand, for instance, it doesn't bode well because many of these countries that I mentioned is still going through some form of lockdown. So it's not particularly good for Malaysia as it stands right now, but it's the same elsewhere around the globe. That's my point. Do you feel that this is something that is going to precipitate a global slowdown in the years to come? Or it's just isolated to Malaysia for some reason?
No, obviously, there is the situation is very much diversified around the world. And I think that the real test will be the coming winter. So I deal a lot with the Western world also for economic reasons, and I see a certain euphoria there. Somehow Europe considers the pandemic finished. Okay, so businesses are projecting initiatives like if we are at the end of the tunnel. Okay, and actually, I believe that we will know the truth about this with winter, because then we will really know if vaccines work or not, if the slowdown of the virus in Europe has been a consequence of the summer or really a consequence of the vaccine. So for knowing this for sure, we have to wait for the winter to come. And I hope that the vaccine indeed really works. So this is, I think, the hope for everybody. So if Europe goes back on track, we still have this part of the world struggling, getting back on track. Somehow we are 1 year delayed when compared with Europe on the virus. But even within the region, there are very different solutions and situations. You see on one side, Malaysia and Thailand adopting very strict movement restrictions and therefore undermining the possibilities of a recovery. And on the other side, you see a much more liberal behavior from Indonesia that not only has been less strict in terms of lockdown, but also has adopted a series of policies to attract foreign investments. And these policies has been proved very successful. And therefore, Indonesia may find itself much better placed when compared to Malaysia and Thailand in driving the regional recovery.
You have been quoted saying that the government should shift its focus towards investing in healthcare improvements so that lockdowns can be eventually abandoned. You were mentioning that vaccines, everybody's hoping for the vaccines to work, but new data has shown us, as recent as yesterday actually, 18% of positive cases in the country are resurgent cases, meaning that it's impacting individuals that have been fully vaccinated. The issue about investing in healthcare improvements and trying to improve on the infrastructure, it's actually a long-haul game. It might not be able to see some benefits in the short term. Hence, there is a resistance of political will in order for governments to continue to make long-term investment. They'd rather solve for now. Do you feel that that whole lack of focus on investing in the long term instead trying to solve for now is going to be really detrimental, not just to the people of Malaysia, but to the government as well in terms of their longevity in the political sphere? What do you think of this whole idea of short term versus long term?
Yeah, I think that obviously in democracy, governments always tend to be short-sighted. But here we are living in an emergency, you know, and the life of people are at stake. So government should make a little bit, should sit down and try to implement a very sound trade-off analysis. And in this analysis, strengthening the healthcare system is much cheaper than doing lockdowns and also much more effective, because we don't need to keep healthy people at home. We need to be able to treat those people that eventually get infected. In this way, you can keep the economy growing and also get more revenues for the government and invest an amount of resources in cure, in research, in temporary hospitals, in ICU beds, spending much less money than what the lockdown is costing.
So 2 days ago, I tweeted something along the lines of the government should reintroduce GST. I was resoundingly attacked on Twitter for the unpopularity of the concept of reintroducing GST. But here you are also making some form of similar likewise suggestion here. CME argues that lowering income tax and corporate tax to ease the burden on the public with the government's resulting shortfall covered by a reintroduction but a modified GST. And CME argues that whereby the tax rate is higher for more expensive goods, but lower for cheaper ones, basically progressive tax system. Again, we were talking about political will just moments ago. This is something that might not be able to see the light of day, largely because the government, any government, not just this one, but any government might find it a hard time trying to make GST work for the public to consume. So are we looking at a situation where it will never be done even though it is needed by the country?
I'm not so sure. I've been a supporter of GST since 2014. If I have to be honest, I published something many years ago, and I published a paper in favor of it back in 2019. So I believe in GST for several reasons, not only because it's a simple tax and easy to be implemented, relatively easy to be implemented and enforced, but also, and in this sense, I see a layered GST with also power of collection given to the states, so that states can get revenues in order to help the fight against COVID-19 with more territorial initiatives. So a sort of devolution of taxation. But secondly, also because I believe that now we need restoring saving. Again, this may look like counterintuitive, but the real economic growth is center of private investment. And private investment needs saving in order to find sound resources to be invested. And also, our households are in a very financially unstable position and need to be helped to rebuild their saving structure. So in this sense, GST is not a magic stick, like no policy, but can be something useful.
All right, let's look into the next few moments that we have. We don't have much time left, but what would be the two or three things that you really want to see the government execute when it comes to addressing the potential pitfalls of the economic crisis that we are facing right now? The two or three things, Dr. Carmelo.
I think that for me, the two pillars of a new strategy are very simple, and somehow we already touched them. On one side, commit to a no-lockdown policy. We know that lockdowns don't work and are extremely costly without producing benefits, and work more on targeted solutions to support the healthcare system. For the rest, the best way to have the economy fly is to get the economy going.
All right. And of course, my final question to you is this. With the parliament reopening very soon, do you feel that some of the measures, or at least half measures, can be seen being pushed across by this government? Are you optimistic that some of these suggestions are going to be taken up by the government? Or do you feel that they're going to hold their path as they have taken for the past 17 months, and we might not see any dramatic changes to the economic policy that is being implemented either in this new administration versus the previous administration that has followed it?
I think that there are reasonable people, and I hope that they will prevail.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, the CEO of Centre for Market Education Malaysia. The conversation of how Malaysia will push forward when it comes to the economic policy is going to be tightly watched and, of course, closely watched. If you've missed the dates, it's going to be critical because when the parliament reopens this September, in just 2 weeks from now, of course, there's that much talked about event, the vote of confidence that would possibly be tabled by the Prime Minister. But, of course, now there's talks on whether or not there should be even a need for a vote of confidence, since the opposition bloc has said that they will support the Prime Minister should a vote of confidence take place. But notwithstanding that, we have to also look into the 12th Malaysia Plan that is going to be introduced in this parliamentary sitting before they go for a short recess. And then, of course, in October, Budget 2022 will take place. So those are the two kind of big items on the calendar right now that we have to watch. The idea here is whether or not there will be a big departure from this administration's approach from the previous administration under Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. A lot of commentators are saying that there wouldn't be so much of a drastic change, particularly when the finance minister, for instance, Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul Aziz, is still the finance minister under this administration as he was in the previous administration. But of course, what we have gotten information is that work towards building the budget has stalled for the past few weeks. So we are looking forward to the work on improving the budget. It's going to be resumed in the near nearest or the quickest of time. Those are the kind of items that we have to keep an eye out for. For now, that's it for this episode for this evening. Thanks very much for watching and goodbye.